Welcome to Food Conversations Season 3. Food Conversations, a program about everything to do with food, starting with planting seeds, and then growing, and then harvesting, distributing, and eating, of course, with special emphasis on establishing food sovereignty in the shoe swap. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKAVS FM 93.7, the voice of the shoe swap, community radio for the people, with the people, and by the people. Now, before we continue, I would like to acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkupmik people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Today is going to be the last show of Season 3, and we're going to end it in style. It's my pleasure to once again welcome into the studio, Sue Moore, well known as a master gardener in the shoe swap. She's the owner of Sudoa Farm, which is now a hotbed of seedlings being distributed to plots all over the region. Welcome back, Sue.
Thank you, Warren.
And as the last show in the season, we're going to make this one a show to remember. I'm going to ply Sue with questions about gardening and growing, and in particular about specific vegetables and their cousins, their likes and dislikes, so that you, the listeners, can have access to Sue's extensive knowledge of sprouting, planting, and growing, or at least one small fraction of it. I would remind you that all our shows are eventually transcribed as podcasts and can be found on our website, voiceoftheshoeswap.ca. That's all one word, voiceoftheshoeswap.ca. You can go back to them whenever you want. This show in particular will be a goldmine of practical information about gardening and growing, and you will be able to listen to it again and again. So, Sue, how does your garden grow?
At the moment, very slowly because of the weather. But, yes, it is growing.
You brought out an important point, Sue. The weather has had a big influence on what's growing now and how well it's growing. How would you characterize the overall influence of this kind of cool, rainy weather? What's its influence?
Well, in the garden, you're going to get some beautiful lettuces and spinach, and the cool crops are probably doing incredibly well. But the hot crops, you may have put your tomato plants in 2 weeks ago, and they're just sitting there doing nothing. So what I'm here to say today is don't worry.
Don't worry.
They're still there. They're still alive. And this week, they should start growing for you.
Mother Nature is always there on the job when we're at sleep and resting and looking in the other direction. By the way, you use the word starts. I love that word starts. Is that the word you used to use when you were a five-year-old in your allotment back in outside North London?
Oh, I believe so. Starts or seedlings or, yeah.
It sounds like such a seedling sort of says, like little baby plants, which is sort of accurate. But starts is like Mother Nature is just going to rev up the engines and pretty soon things are going to take off like a rocket. By the way, because you're distributing your seedlings starts around the community, where are they available now?
Oh, I sell out of my front yard.
You do indeed.
Yes, from 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and Saturday I sell at the Sorrento Farmers Market, for not this week, but then for the next 2 weeks.
And I think we can give a small commercial announcement. What's the address of your place?
It's 1841 3rd Avenue Southeast.
And it's very easy to find.
Yeah, I'm open from 10 till 2.
10 till 2. So all listeners who are looking for a few more seedlings and need to stock up, that's the place to get them. All organically grown. And I just picked up Sue this morning, and it's like a wild landscape of small plants everywhere. So let's get into some generalities about growing. And on a previous show, we talked about soil. And maybe we could start there with what is it that is essential? What are the essential good qualities of soil, or the essential qualities of good soil, that and how do you make it that way? What do you add to the soil if you need to, that makes it that way?
Well, it's all according what's kind of soil you're starting with. If you're starting with something that's heavy clay, you need something to break it up and to put some air into the soil. The roots need the air pockets to grow. Sawdust is very good. Perlite is very good, and then of course to add your composts.
Compost. One ingredient you did mention. What about wood chips? I know people who have a neighbor who's put wood chips, and in a year they've turned into very light, airy kind of soil. It has to be the right kind of wood, of course.
It has to be the right kind of wood, and basically no hardwood, no cedar. That's your basics.
Sure.
Wood chips are great, except as they break down, they use nitrogen. So what they do is initially they deplete your soil of nitrogen. So for instance, if they take 3 years to break down, in those first couple of years, you're going to have to add nitrogen to your soil. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have a real boost because they'll be able to give that nitrogen
sure.
back.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk to my neighbor about that. you mentioned compost. I don't think there is a more wonderful subject to address when talking about gardening than compost. I remember a young man who came to help me shovel some horse manure out of the back of my pickup to put in the garden, and we put in a sort of a compost bin for a little more maturation. And I said, "This is going to make wonderful carrots." And he said, "You put horse shit in the garden?" Oh, dear. What he did not know was a lot. So talk about compost. It's marvelous stuff, compost.
Well, first of all, before you put compost into your vegetable garden, you need to make sure that it's well broken down, that it is mature. If it's too hot, and the two composts that tend to be too hot are horse and chicken. And if it's too hot, you'll see your beautiful rows of seedlings and starts all coming up and being beautifully healthy, and then 2 or 3 days later they're dead. And what's happened is the nitrogen in the hot compost has actually burnt your seedlings.
My father-in-law many years ago got a load of fresh chicken manure, and he left it for 2 years. And when he took it away, the ground underneath the chicken manure was completely sterile. It was a marvelous little circle, a crop circle, the first crop circle I ever saw.
But some of the other, you know, kind of composts do break down a little easier. Your goat, your sheep. And the other thing is not to use the same compost year after year.
That's an interesting point. So vary the kind of nutrient content, I think.
Yes, because some composts would, I think it's chicken compost, excuse me, has phosphates. And if you build that up too much, your soil becomes off-balanced.
Very interesting.
A good way to deal with that is just to use a different type of compost every year.
Absolutely.
If you can.
Then you won't overdo one of them. So let's go on to one of the other major components of growing things, and that's water. Now, water right now seems to be joining us from the skies, but it isn't always doing that. So what sort of general principles are there around water and growing things?
Well, each crop really has different water requirements. And sometimes that can be really difficult to deal with. What I like to do, if possible, is to group my water-loving vegetables in one area and my less water-loving vegetables in another area. And I do not like to have automatic overhead sprinklers.
Overhead sprinklers in hot weather, you're evaporating a good chunk of the water that you're spraying, for one thing.
You are, and if they're manually controlled and you're not concerned about the volume of the water you're using, they can be really efficient. But if they're automatic and they come on at a certain time every day, then, you know, your sprinkler system doesn't know if it's raining or not.
No, it's hard to program it for that. That's very hard. So water has to be adjusted to the plants, and grouping them in sort of low and high water groups is a basic principle.
It's a good principle. The only vegetable that I don't like overhead watering at all is a tomato plant. And that's not quite so important here in the Shuswap as it is down on the coast. But down on the coast, where you get the late and early blight, it's an airborne fungus.
Right.
And the overhead watering, of course, brings it down onto the plant, and then you get the problems. So, yeah.
Not a good idea.
I have had that problem here in the Shuswap, but not very often.
What about ground watering, soaker hoses and sprinkling water, you know, from something on the ground as opposed to overhead?
That's ideal once the crop is grown. Hmm. if you have a fairly large area of freshly seeded product, you might want to do a little bit of overhead watering if there's no rain.
Get the whole area soaked.
To get the whole area soaked and to keep the whole of the soil on top of the seed damp.
Sure.
Okay. Once it starts growing, especially once it's got a good root system on it, then your drip system conserves water and is excellent.
So let's just talk a little bit about food nutrition, that is the food that plants eat in order that they can be healthy so that we can eat them and gain nutritional value. Since World War II, there's been a lot of introduction of all sorts of artificial fertilizers, the nitrogen fixation from the atmosphere, the process, the chemical process spawned this giant industry that's produced soluble nitrogen. But plants need food. They need extra food sometimes. And there's a move back towards more natural sources of feeding plants. What would you describe as, you know, there's the NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, basic set of values. How would you characterize how you make sure that your plants have the right food? And what are some of the favorite additives that you would put in soil to make it?
Well, My favorite additive, of course, is good, well-rotted compost. But as you're growing your garden, especially if you have a smaller garden where it's harder to do a reasonable crop rotation, then some of the things I like to add would be a blood meal or a feather meal, which will give you your nitrogen. Now, both of those have an L in their name, and that means it's for leaves.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the nitrogen goes into the leaf, and so your spinach, your chard, and all plants that have leaves, actually, but the ones that you want to eat in particular, you would add a nitrogen to. For plants that flower, I like to add a bone meal, and that gives you your cauliflower, your broccoli, your beans, your tomatoes, your peppers, anything that you actually either eat the flower or the product of the flower.
The fruit.
Yes. Yeah, and then some wood ash to help with the vigor of your plant,
which has a lot of carbon in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Are there amendments that are problematic? I know that the soluble nitrogen amendments, the sort of chemical nitrogen, disappear from they can wash out of the soil and get into local water systems and that kind of thing and cause eutrophication, that kind of thing. But most of the biological amendments stay in place, as I understand. They're more likely to be fixed. So the wood ash, the bone meal, the blood meal, that kind of thing, they don't run around as much.
No, they don't run around as much. When you get into actual farming, and some of the dairy farmers and the hog farmers will put a slurry onto their fields, then if they put it on in the, you know, in the wrong weather conditions, that can be just as harmful to the wildlife as anything else. The thing that I like to do is to put the compost on, because the compost actually has some trace minerals in it as well.
Sure.
And if you put on a pure nitrogen, even in an organic form like bone meal or blood meal, you still don't have those trace minerals.
I notice a number of fertilizers say on the label, with either added or incorporated in them by nature, trace minerals. And it seems to me, certainly with human health, that's a critically important thing. Things like chromium and selenium are valuable for human health. And if they're not in the soil, local agricultural people growing animals have to add it to the soil, and humans have to take it as well. It has a very useful cancer-preventing role in human health. So let's move now to, before we get into specific plants, to the one subject that has been so unbalanced in its management for decades that we have to set the record straight, and that is dealing with pests on plants. I picked up a Ministry of Agriculture booklet a few years ago from the BC Ministry of Agriculture on growing various kinds of food trees, and every tree that was mentioned, the solution to whatever the pest was a chemical, an artificial pesticide or herbicide or insecticide. Let's talk a little bit about pest management without using all those kinds of chemicals. There are things that can be done. Maybe you could just outline just a rough idea of what the basic rules are there.
Well, in actually back into farming, there's a process called IPM, which is integrated pest management, and that could either be through chemicals or by natural predators, according to your philosophy. With your home garden, there's various nettings and protection systems that you can use. And then there are some biologicals that you can purchase to spray. And then there is growing plants that will encourage the beneficial insects, so that the problem insects don't get out of hand. And quite honestly, you have problem insects in the majority of gardens. But if you have the beneficials, they really don't harm your food.
I've been told that many wild plants that we call them weeds, I call them hardy native perennials, are more attractive to some of the what we call pest insects than the ones that we grow. They find the ones we grow kind of bland and dull, whereas the wild plants are richer in flavor. Is there any truth to that?
Well, they can be. They can be. When I was farming down in Mission, I actually used to let a patch of thistles grow, and they really attracted this little black fly. When the black fly got very heavy on the thistles, I would just chop them off and put them in the burning barrel. And therefore, I didn't get them on my beans, which was another attractant for them.
Where you didn't want them.
Where I didn't want them. So yes, that's one way of dealing with pests.
I want to ask you one more general question. That is about succession planting, something that I have to develop my expertise in. Talk a little bit about succession planting and why it can be important, especially for things that mature quickly.
It can be important because you probably like to eat broccoli once a week or you know, those beautiful fresh young carrots every few days. You can plant carrots fairly early in the season and right up until about the 1st of July. And as long as you thin them and give them a good growing condition, you'll have carrots right into the fall. The problem with carrots is, again, getting back onto the pests, is the carrot root maggot. And this can be an issue, especially if you plant early carrots. So if you've had a problem with carrot root maggot, the best thing to do, and you want your early carrots, is to seed them and then put down either Remay or Protect Net to stop the flies getting in to start that cycle going. If you break that cycle, then hopefully your later carrots will not have an issue.
Now, you mentioned Protect Net and
yes.
Remay. For listeners who may have heard those words, who need to know what the difference is between what they do and what they're for, could you compare and contrast Protect Net and Remay?
Both of them are cloth fabrics. Remay comes in different weights and gives you different amounts of heat protection as well as pest protection. So if you put a lightweight Remay on your carrots early in the season, you will get a little bit of added heat, which will help them to grow, so you get an earlier carrot. And it will also protect from the root maggot.
Really? So the root maggot comes from above and then down into the soil?
It's a fly.
Oh.
It's a fly. Yeah. Yeah. And they're attracted. They lay their eggs on the crown of the carrot, and then they go down into the carrot, and of course, good.
Naughty root fly. You're competing with humans. Please do that.
the Protect Net does not give you any heat value whatsoever. So it's, if you're needing to protect something later in the season when the weather is hot, you'll be better to use Protect Net. It's not as readily available, and it too comes in different sizes for you know, down as a, to prevent thrips or whatever, which is a really tight weave up to a larger weave. I've only found it available through William Dam's seed catalog.
Which I'm not familiar with that catalog, but obviously it's not in all the local stores or...
I've not found it in the local stores. It may be more readily available now, but I've not found it in the local stores. When I was farming, we imported it from Quebec.
My goodness, that's a long way away.
Yes.
All right. I think we've covered some basics about plants in general, and so I think it would be, you know, people grow various things, and we should maybe talk about some of those various things that people grow, because I'm sure some listeners will say, "Oh, I want to do that. I definitely want to do that." So let's start at the beginning of the alphabet with asparagus.
Oh, asparagus. My father and I used to fight over asparagus. He planted it at the back of the garden for an ornamental fern. And of course, I used to eat it. So,
eating the ornaments. It does have an ornamental feature. I mean, it's a beautiful plant when you don't harvest it. But it's very yummy.
It's very, very yummy. And asparagus is either a male plant or a female plant. And if you get an open pollinated asparagus, you'll see that some of them have berries on. That's the female plant. Some of them don't. That's the male plant. And the male plant is more productive, usually, than the female plant.
And do you have to plant a male and a female together to sort of cross-fertilize, or do they...
If you wanted to keep the seed, yes, but not for any other reason.
Okay.
If you buy a hybrid plant or some specially sexed seeds, then you will only get male plants and you will get better productivity.
What kind of, how do you put them in the soil? I know you have to put them down deep a little bit.
They're a very heavy feeder. So if you dig a trench, and I believe the trench would have to be about 18 inches, and put your compost in the bottom of the trench and put your plant in the trench and then gradually fill it in as the shoots emerge. And don't take any shoots for at least the first year, if you can resist, not for the second year either. And get a really good, strong, healthy root, because the top foliage feeds the roots.
Do you have to, because they're heavy feeders, do you have to keep on adding some kind of strength to the soil, some kind of fertilizer energy that seeps down?
This is a plant that I would just use compost on, and I would just add it as a top dressing on a regular basis.
I'm waiting for the asparagus grow. This is the middle of asparagus season, and there it's a wonderful time of the year. let's go to beets. A lot of people around here grow beets, eat beets. What's the profile of beets? What do they like? What do they dislike? What do we do to make them happy?
Beets, you can use a very fertile soil or a slightly less fertile soil. They'll grow really well. They have a really long taproot, so they do fairly well in low water. If you wanted the leaves in particular, there are some varieties that give you better leaves than others. The general one for early growing that I really used to like was an early one to Tortop. Gives you a really nice sized round beet, and also gives you incredibly luxuriant leaves.
What's that strain again?
Early Wonder Tall Top.
Early Wonder Tall Top.
Yes.
There, you heard it on this station. Early Wonder Tall Top.
And with the beets, if you wanted some to store for the winter, again, you would look for a storage type of beet. And if you can get them, there's a variety called Lutz, L-U-T-Z.
Okay.
And that gives you a really large, sweet beet, which is absolutely delicious in February, March, and April, out of the bottom drawer of your fridge. They're just fabulous.
Very, very durable.
Very, very durable.
So continuing through the alphabet...
I would like to add one thing, though,
sure.
to beets, is that if you get a beet and your beet has a hard core or is not particularly palatable, you probably have a boron deficiency.
Oh, really?
And you should be very, very careful about adding boron. It's only something like one... Oh, I can't remember, 1 pound or 1 kilo per acre.
Mm. So in a flower pot with a beet plant in it, with just a little smidgen.
A tiny pinch, yes.
A tiny pinch.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, boron is actually an essential element, trace mineral for humans. But the amounts required are also minuscule. You don't need 2 or 3 milligrams in a full-size body is enough to restore what you need. So, boron leads directly to B, which leads to the one of the B foods, and that's broccoli. We've already talked about broccoli, but let's go into depth about broccoli.
Well, broccoli is another plant that needs boron, actually.
Oh, well, there we are.
And the sign that you don't have enough boron in your soil is when you cut your broccoli, if it has a hollow stem, it means that there's not enough boron in your soil.
And then you get out the boron machine gun and fire a few bullets in the soil.
Or you add a little tiny bit to your compost for next year just to improve that quality.
So what is broccoli like? What does it like and need in order to really flourish?
We could do a whole program on broccoli. It needs the nitrogen for the leaves, and it needs the potassium for the flower development.
Sue was just mouthing the word for potassium. The word for potassium, the letter is K.
Oh, I've got it wrong.
But I just want to make the point that when people use Latin as the basis of modern day thinking, we have problems because the Latin word for potassium is kalium, K-A-L-I-U-M, and which is ridiculous because, of course, potassium starts with the letter P, which is the same as phosphorus, which is why they call it K, I think, but still, they could have made it easier.
Thanks for the clarification there. I'm not a technical farmer. I'm not, yes.
You're a farmer with dirt under your nails.
Exactly,
which is
exactly.
The kind you want to talk to.
Exactly. So you need for flower development, you need for general plant development, and you need for leaf development. So it's a heavy feeder. Your earlier broccolis usually have a slightly smaller head and will give you lots of side shoots. And so I always like, in my home garden, I always do at least two plantings of broccoli. One for that first head, and then continuing with the side shoots, and then some later broccoli for some bigger heads in the fall.
So you would sometimes plant two different strains, ones that do better left, or just pick one set early and leave
two different strains.
Two different strains. Okay.
Two different strains. Some seed is genetically better for growing in a hot season. Some is better for growing in a cool season. Yeah.
Around here, we don't know what to do. We had a heat dome last year, and now we're having a cool spring.
Read your seed catalog.
Yes, indeed. And talk to Mother Nature. So let's move on to the letter C, cabbage. Broccoli and cabbage and Brussels sprouts all belong to the Brassica family, if I'm not mistaken. And they all have some shared characteristics. But what's special about cabbage? What does it need?
Cabbage is a biennial. So you're not eating the flower, you're eating the leaf. So it requires a high nitrogen, and you can go a little lower in your P and K. it's really interesting. Your early cabbages that mature early in the season, you can cut the head off and utilize the head. And like a Brussels sprout, you'll get little cabbages coming at the bottom. You should be careful you don't get an aphid infestation at this point. But those little cabbages will supply you with greens, not necessarily a heading cabbage, but with greens for the rest of the season if you have the space to leave them.
The other C that we have already talked about is the famous carrot, the carrot named after the orange royal family of Holland, I'm told, the orange color anyway, not the carrot part. Carrots are very popular. They're a staple root crop, certainly around here. What do they need, apart from keeping the root maggot out of their territory? What's important for carrots?
Carrots are a lower feeding vegetable. if you have too much nitrogen in your soil, you'll tend to get really hairy carrots. And that's not necessarily an issue, except that a lot of the energy goes into growing those roots, whereas what you want is the energy to go into growing that nice, big, fat root. And so what you'll tend to get is a hairy carrot, which is skinny with a huge flush of leaf.
So you want the root, the main root, to be the dominant.
Exactly.
Part of it.
So you don't want that really fertile soil, particularly, or at least you want a soil which is really well balanced.
I've heard of people putting sand in the soil for carrots. I mean, adding some sand to the soil, is that a sensible thing to do? I mean, obviously, it reduces the nutrient content to some degree.
It is a sensible thing to do if you have, for instance, a heavy clay soil. Because you want your carrot to have a nice straight root so that you can just rinse it clean or, heaven forbid, peel it easily.
Or eat it right out of the garden. Sorry, I had to throw that in. Sorry, childhood memories.
So yeah. The addition of the sand will break down the intensity of the clay, which allows the root to be straighter.
Straight is good, I suppose, in some circumstances.
And getting back onto your color of carrots, the original carrots were tended to be purple.
Yes, indeed. And I'm told that they are more flavorful.
They're incredibly flavorful. Back when I was on the farm, I actually grew seed as a part of my operation, and one of the things I grew was a purple carrot, and I still have some of that seed, I hope. But it has a purple skin and an interior core of orange, and sometimes a center core of yellow. So you don't peel them, you slice them. They look incredibly beautiful on the plate, and yes, they are tastier. They're slightly drier.
So you maybe have a carrot sauce or something like that on.
Well, for a carrot person who likes to eat a fresh carrot pulled out of the garden and have it really juicy, will possibly not like them quite as much. But the chef in the kitchen is going to absolutely adore them.
Well, chefs are important people. They need to be kept happy. No question about that. There are a number of brassica here family, vegetable, the brassica family, the list of vegetables I have here. I'm going to move on to some other classes. Still under letter C, celery. Celery, a wonderful vegetable that for years I did not appreciate, but recently have started to appreciate greatly. And I couldn't stand a salad without a little bit of celery in it, chopped up, or lots of other kinds of dishes. What is interesting and unusual about celery?
Celery is easily grown in this area, but you will not get that beautiful white heart that you get from your California celery. What you would tend to get is a greener, stringier, tastier celery.
What is the reason for that difference?
It's the amount of heat units, how quickly it grows, etc. And you will get a white heart, but it tends to be a little bit smaller, and you will only get it for a short period of time. With celery, as the plant grows, you can strip off the outside leaves in the garden and use them in your salads and soups. I tend to chop it really small for a salad, and it has a higher flavor. So if you really like celery, you're really going to like it. And if you, celery is okay. Just be a little aware of that.
Any special requirements in nutritional terms for the celery? What is it? Does it need anything special?
It's a high feeder. It needs that compost, that high nitrogen type situation, and it's water loving.
What about, speaking of fertilizers, there's some popular liquid fertilizer or fertilizer that dissolve in liquid. One is, of course, fish fertilizer, and the other is seaweed fertilizer. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about the liquid ones, which sort of give water to a plant like celery? They give nutrients, plus they give water.
They're ideal for a quick fix. If your plant is under some kind of stress, maybe you've gone away for a while and you come back and it's kind of sad and yellow looking.
I've seen that phenomenon.
You may want to give your plant some water and then some fish fertilizer.
Sure.
Okay, and so then that will really help. With the seaweed fertilizers, they would be more for flower production. So again, if you look at your poor plant in the garden, and maybe it's a tomato, they'll need both fish and
seaweed.
The seaweed. So
there's plants are wonderful. They have personalities of an interesting sort. One plant that we have spring up every year as a volunteer in our garden is cilantro/coriander.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start it, you've got it for life. And it's a beautiful plant. The cilantro is a lovely, delicate sort of addition to green salads and other things. And then, of course, the coriander has this wonderful flavor when you grind up the seeds. Any special things? It seems to be very, very durable. Once it knows where it lives, it comes back every year.
Well, any plant that will come back every year has found its niche. coriander, if you want the leaf, you do have to succession plant it, because it does go to seed very quickly.
It does indeed go to seed. Sue, we're still on the C's, and there's a lot of letters in the alphabet, so we may have to have you back again if you can come in to deal. But there's a few more plants that I know are very popular around here and widely grown. Now, one of them that is grown more on a large scale is corn, but you can grow corn in your own garden. It's part of the Three Sisters unitary corn, beans, and squash. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk about corn and then maybe a little bit about the Three Sisters?
Well, corn is something that is basically not grown in England. It's cow food.
Yes.
So it was totally new to me to grow it for food once I came over here. It is wind pollinated, and it needs to be pollinated to form a good cob. So with corn, it's best to plant it in a square. So if you're only putting in 20 plants, you would put in 5x4.
Okay.
Rather than putting in a long line of 20 plants. And that will give you a better cob production. I guess the Three Sisters, they kind of knew this, but the beans that you would plant with the corn, the beans would grow up the corn and have some support, keep them off of the ground. And a bean takes its nitrogen from the air, transfers it to the root, and then, of course, other plants can utilize that nitrogen. So corn is a heavy feeder and would utilize the nitrogen. For convenience as well, the squash plant would be planted with these and would trail out of that area, perhaps over a rockier terrain or something like that, and would utilize that nitrogen as well.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea. People have really become interested. I have a friend who's trying the Three Sisters approach, and obviously, if something's been used for a few thousand years, it's probably a good idea.
It is a good idea, and I would also add that a pole bean grown up a fence or a trellis or you know, your typical poles, actually gives you far more production per square foot
than if it's on the ground.
Than a bush bean.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've grown both, and I've watched the pole beans just all late in the summer. They're still loaded with beans. One plant that I am particularly fond of in terms of eating, and I need to know how to grow properly, is eggplant.
Oh, dear. Well, I used to grow eggplant as a trap crop for a potato beetle. But it's a beautiful plant. It has very attractive leaves, very attractive flowers, and of course that gorgeous fruit. And to me, the glossy black of the true eggplant is the one that I really like. It's a really heavy feeder. It needs some spacing, and it needs to be started early.
Yes, and in terms of heat, it requires a fair amount, but it can be overheated. Is that correct? Because I've heard that sort of story.
I've grown them both in the greenhouse and in the field. They are. Don't take me for this for gospel. I believe they are self-fertile, so they don't need to be pollinated by the insects, although the bees do enjoy them. And so it's possible to grow them in a closed situation like a greenhouse. And they've always done really well for me there. Mm. I've never found that they've gotten particularly overheated, although I have heard that they get burn on the sides of the fruit occasionally.
But generally speaking, they're fairly heat tolerant.
Yeah, they're quite heat tolerant.
More heat tolerant than cold tolerant?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, let's go on. There's a local favorite, very much as a cash crop around here, is garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's one of the foods that I don't think you can ever get too much of. Some people call it a superfood because it's very rich in sulfur and a whole bunch of other things that are really very good for human health. What are some of the main features of garlic?
One is to know when and how to plant it. So you plant it in the fall. It can be planted right up until the ground is too frozen to be worked. So I tend to plant mine in October, but you can plant it right up until early December. Break up the cloves. I have known people put a whole clove into the garden and then wonder why they didn't get any garlic. So each clove will produce a full garlic bulb the following year.
Right. So the whole, you're saying the whole bulb shouldn't be planted altogether.
It should not.
Take all the little
absolutely
parts.
Break it up. And plant it just, yes. And garlic can tolerate most soils. It does like some, to eat. It likes some food. It's really nice to give it a dressing of compost in the spring. I have never mulched my garlic, which a lot of people do. But if I was to mulch it, it would be more for weed suppression. So garlic needs to be kept weed-free. It doesn't compete well.
Okay.
And when your garlic is growing, you come to June, July, and you think, oh, God, when do I harvest this? Well, you harvest it when you want it, but the main thing is each leaf of a garlic represents the number of skins around your garlic bulb.
Really?
So when you have three dry leaves on your garlic, you have three dry or drying skins on your garlic bulb. So if you allow all of your leaves to go brown, you will have no protective cover on your garlic bulb at all.
So as soon as the leaves start to dry out?
I used to go with three leaves, and then that would be premium for taking it out and drying it. When you do dry it, don't dry it in the sun. The sun will cook it very quickly. So you brush the dirt off of it as much as you can. Hopefully it's fairly dry when you do dig it, and then you just hang it in an airy place, and it will dry and store for months.
So either in the shade or indoors?
In the shade. We had a garlic drying shed. And it used to be shaded in the shed, and a good wind flow going through it.
I don't want all the other letters to feel badly, so I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. Lettuce is everywhere, it seems to me. If you go to a restaurant, they say, "Would you like a salad?" And it's a lot of lettuce. That's you cannot start your meal without a salad. Lettuce, what's you special and unique about lettuces, because there's lots of different strains of lettuce?
Lettuce is a very quick grower. You can plant your seed, and within 2 months you've got a nice healthy lettuce. You don't need to let it get to store size before you eat it. If you want it, you go out there, take a pair of scissors, cut the whole head of lettuce above the growing tip, and lo and behold, 2 weeks later, you've got another beautiful lettuce sitting there. So most lettuces can be planted in the spring and will give you a really nice lettuce. In the heat of the summer, it's more difficult to grow lettuce.
They bolt.
So there are varieties that you can grow in the summer. And again, read your seed catalog. And we used to grow, I believe it was the Wardman Stark Green, and then a couple of the Summer Crisps during the summer. And then we would plant again for fall lettuce.
So the strain of lettuce is important for growing. It's also a plant where before about succession planting as well. That could be a way to do it?
That could be a way to do it. And the majority of lettuces will grow all year, but they won't head all year, and they will bolt to seed in certain seasons. So if you are growing your lettuce for a baby lettuce, for your salads, you can keep succession planting it. And this is important because eventually all lettuce will turn bitter. Mm-hmm. And if you try and crop your lettuce for several months, then you will end up with a more bitter tasting salad, which some people find pleasant, but most people find unpalatable.
Unpleasant.
Yeah.
Honestly, we've been having such a good time, I've practically lost all sense of time. And we're now coming to the end of the show, and we're going to have you back, Sue, if you can. If you can stand it, we will be very happy to have you back to talk about some of the other plants that are being grown around here, because there's a lot of variety of plants, and vegetables are coming back, thank heavens. The amount of vegetable gardening, both individual and commercial, is increasing slowly. And it's a wonderful thing to see. Maybe you could just give us a 30-second comment about the changing food system and how important it is to change it from this long-distance chemical-based approach.
Well, first of all, I think that if you buy your seeds from the catalogs, you get a different type of vegetable, which often tastes better. you get to eat a local product which hasn't traveled for miles and lost nutrients, texture, etc. And even the lowly potato has a totally different taste and is very vibrant, locally grown.
Sue, we have to have you back, and we will. We're coming to the end of the show. Thank you so much. I'm sure listeners are going to be making notes all the way through that show and probably our next one. And we're going to say goodbye to you for today.